Wake up, America. It's Morning Air with John Morales.
Si, senor.
Sarah Tafoya.
This is my mom.
Am I going to get paid for this?
And Glenn Leverins.
This is Morning Air. That's how I know. On Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for Morning Air here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. Glenn and Sarah in for John today. A full lineup of guests this hour, including Dave Duran, looking at success and leadership, in particular productivity, before the hour is through. Father Marcel Tyone joins us in just a moment. And Sarah, you know, if a guest were not to show up, that accordion that you heard just a few seconds ago, it's sitting in the box in the corner of the studio here. So if I need to fill for 25 minutes or so, we could have a fine host of accordion tunes. But, you know, as long as our guest keeps showing up, I guess we don't have to go there. So that's pretty good. You know, and an old coworker of mine, a great guy, Rob Moore, with the accordion, he would say, do you know, and I'm thinking he's making a request. And in a way, it was a request. He'd always ask me if I could play Softly and Far, Far Away. And,
I've never heard that song. It'd be great I could do that one.
It wasn't the name of the song. He just wanted me to get out of there. Maybe he needed to rest up a little bit. Maybe he wanted to celebrate nap day today.
Oh, yeah, that would be great because naps are so beneficial. And I know we were talking with Ashley about naps, and in the Mediterranean, they call naps riposo pisolini, which sounds so great, right? Like, oh, it's like maybe an Italian dish. No, it just means a rest nap. But I mean, that sounds like a great name for a food anyways, either way. But yeah, it's so important. In fact, there's like a lot of famous nappers, people who are famous.
Famous nappers.
Famous people, and they were nappers. So I have a couple. Eleanor Roosevelt, she was famous for taking short naps right before she would give a speech because, you know, you get that little bit of rest and then she'd be energized and then she could go and give her speeches. And Napoleon Bonaparte had a really erratic sleep schedule, but he would be famous for just falling asleep at will and sometimes on the battlefield, which... You know, maybe that we kind of know what happened there. Maybe not the best idea. Leonardo da Vinci also taking naps. He would, instead of just sleeping like normal, some of this is just a regular bad sleeping schedules, it seems like. He would take a nap every 4 hours, but he would not like just go to sleep. So that just seems like not a good plan. But he did get a lot of things done in that time. So he was very good at maximizing that time. And Margaret Thatcher, also known for taking naps as well. But I was clocking. She would maybe sleep 4 hours at night and then take a 1 hour nap. That's still less sleep than I get. So I don't like her schedule. I'm not going to do that. But I think it's still important that we try to take naps, especially since we're up so early, Glenn.
I firmly agree with you there, you know. I mean, and depending on what's going on in life around you, it can be easier or tougher. I know later in the week, you know, after a week of getting up early, sometimes it can be handy. We've even termed it around the household, maybe Friday afternoon, a Friday afternoon celebratory nap, because you're done with the early waking up for a couple of days. And then there is the art form, okay, if you're going to do it on a weekday, and you don't want to take it too late in the day, so it affects your overnight sleep, although sometimes you're like, okay, I can be groggy and maybe grumpy for the next 5 hours, or if I take a bit of a nap now, you know, you won't see me for 45 minutes, but then I'll be happy and pleasant the rest of the evening.
I wonder which one people vote for, the cranky for 5 hours or missing for 45 minutes.
Oh, we'll do our best. We'll do our best. It's good to know. And one and all should be proud to be on that list. I think it's maybe God's sense of humor that as much as we might have rebelled against naps as little kids, we come to appreciate them as adults. We appreciate Father Marcel Tyone. He's wide awake and ready to go. That's our assumption. Joining us from Providence, Rhode Island today in that general area, Narragansett, Rhode Island, we should say, actually. Great to have you along from St. Thomas More Parish. How are you doing today, Father?
I'm doing great. Having a great Lent. We wrapped up our mission and full houses, and we're just blessed. So I'm doing great.
Well, that's good. That's good. Hey, you know, we lost him in the last year, but Pope Emeritus Benedict left us with just a raft of great info and great inspiration. And you have called upon some of that today to, you know, take some little daily steps to be more holy. And these are some, actually would make some good Lenten practices, too.
Yeah, Pope Benedict had some, you know, I think sometimes for Lent we start out strong and we might have huge goals. And I think Pope Benedict had some great recommendations for Lent that were small things throughout the day and the week, so sort of not too overwhelming, but in a sense might actually make a big difference in our Lent. And we're just really at the halfway mark and looking towards Holy Week now, and daylight saving time moves us forward. But he suggested some things that were simple, things like twice a day have contact with God, meaning maybe a morning offering and a nighttime offering. And I know many of you might do that, but some people don't. Some people pray in the shower in the morning, or every time they wash their hands, they speak to the Lord. It's a reminder of baptism. I know people that use all kinds of tricks of the trade to have a brief contact with God throughout the day. Every morning, thanking God again, that great, the morning offering, I think, is important to give God our day. We don't know what's going to happen next, what news we'll receive, who we'll meet all day. There's no way to tell, and that's the beauty of being a disciple, a friend of Jesus, just going in for the ride, but consecrating him, telling the Lord we love him in the morning. I mean, years ago, we had a missionary priest came in and said, when you come into church, what do you say? He said, you say, I love you, Lord. He said, in the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. He said, don't go into the prayer. Say, I love you, Lord. And we can do that in the morning in our homes. He suggested that. He also suggested finding a time to rejoice every day, not just ask something, but maybe the gratitude sandwich, right? We praise God, we adore him, we worship him, then we might share our desires and our lives for him, and then again, and with a rejoicing disposition. And I know we have in Lent and Advent, Laudare and Gaudete Sundays that are coming up, and those are again, we change to rose-colored vestments in most churches as a really, Lent's supposed to be a joyful season, not a season of misery and sadness, but joyfulness, springtime, and new life. So really kind of finding a time to rejoice throughout the day. And then looking forward to Sunday, right? Sunday's the first day of the week. It's really not part of a weekend. That word's probably not so Christian. It's a little secular, so we want to realize Sunday's the first day of the week. So longing for the Eucharist, getting hungry during this Eucharistic revival for Jesus' true presence, being around him in the tabernacle, making visits perhaps, but really looking forward to Sunday, making Sunday and Mass, the encounter with the Eucharist, the top thing we're longing for besides anything else in our week, whether that's being with family, leisure time, resting time, even napping time, as I heard at the top of the hour, naps are great. But looking forward to the Eucharist more than anything, which will wake us up and make us even have more peaceful naps, right? So there's that. He suggested, too, being open to signs that God gives us throughout the day. We look through our day. When did I feel God or experience God today? Maybe it's during a relevant radio show. Maybe it's during an encounter, a smile, or an encounter with someone at a convenience store, a supermarket, or a text from a friend we haven't thought of in a while, or someone's in need of something from us. And we see Christ there. So kind of, he said, take notes of having signs from God. He also suggested kind of taking in works of art, which is amazing, right? You think of, he said to contemplate works of art, which really is to contemplate beauty. And one of Benedict's gifts was, in rediscovering really our roots of Christian Europe, but also our roots in our own lives. But really, he had an attraction to beauty, both in word and in art. And I think sort of leaning into that in different ways. I think sometimes even locally, maybe we can't get to Gothic cathedrals in Europe, but we can maybe visit a different church for a mission or a shrine or make a pilgrimage. And I love when we travel, because when we walk into a church we've never been in, unlike the people there every Sunday who sit in the same seat and usually sit in the same spot, we look around and see all the artistic and the art in the windows, things like that. We can certainly do that online today, but even more in person, I think sort of lifting our minds and hearts. We suggested contemplating works of art, which I think is again a nice way to celebrate Lent. He talked about his other point, simple things, and being enjoying a sense of humor. I'm not taking ourselves too seriously in laughter. I know I've had some priest friends and seminarians in town, so we laughed a lot, very, very good humor, and it lifts the spirit. You sort of sometimes just really keeping a humorous disposition towards life. Again, not the caustic humor, but I would call more Christian humor, really just enjoying that. He suggested, too, invoking the saints more often. I got St. Patrick's Day coming up, St. Joseph Day, and we might think of those as more culturally sometimes, of Italians and Irish, although you know, we know that St. Joseph was not from Italy and St. Patrick was not from Ireland. Don't drive off the road if you're listening to this in the car. But I think sometimes, you know, it's great that we celebrate the cultures around these saints, but we got to not forget, right? St. Patrick was a great forgiver. St. Joseph was a great dying to self, protecting and giving his life to the Holy Family and to us, really, a universal patron of the church. So I think invoking the saints, and, you know, sometimes we maybe get some new saints, right? I know everyone kind of has their St. Anthony or maybe their favorite saint, certainly our Blessed Mother, but maybe discovering some other saints and befriending them and asking them. Benedict suggests invoking them more often, so throughout the day. And again, little times to let Christ break into our day. And lastly, he said, and this, I know he had said this about liturgy too, said take time for silence. You know, again, sometimes we've got our headsets on, we've got earbuds in our ears, and, you know, you go to the gym, nobody talks to each other, everybody's got their, in their world. You go down a New York street sometimes, everybody's looking down, listening to their music, their podcast, or nobody's looking even at each other. And that's not silence. That's we got to be careful with all that. But really taking time for silence. Sometimes I find if I'm in the car, you know, not having the radio on, unless it's Relevant Radio, but if shutting off the radio, then really kind of your car can automatically become a place of silence. And everything looks different when we kind of almost have the audio off. And, you know, again, Pope Benedict recommended silence at times during Mass because he thought that also that those pauses after communion or certain places he instructed to do this in liturgy, but also in our own lives. Now, some people live alone and we kind of prefer a little bit of noise, but especially if you've got kids or grandkids all around or lots of friends or, you know, spouses that have the TV on all day, all these kind of things, really making sure we meet God during the day by having a bit of silence. So he gave us all these different nine things that are really relevant to us today, and maybe at this point in Lent, can take one, two, three, or all of those, and let's just today try one of those things, and let's do that this week, take a few of Benedict's suggestions. Again, a man who lived a very good life, a very humble life, he was a brilliant man, but also very humble, and I think one of the Benedict's reasons he would have suggested these things is he did them himself, and I think we saw him do that. He modeled that for us, and we need to maybe pick up some of these great simple tactics for Lent that will help us kind of keep our Lent going strong as we move forward.
Father Marcel Tyon joining us for this portion of Morning Air here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. If we're looking for some practices to pick up, maybe swap out for something we can do a little better on during Lent, and certainly some of these to keep going beyond Lent as well. But to unpack some parts of that list just a little bit, Father, that idea of, you know, touching base with God at least a couple times a day, but maybe too that idea of, and this might vary depending on how we're doing in our spiritual life, but to remember that God is with us and to have that almost that running dialogue with Him throughout the day, almost that stream of consciousness dialogue, that just simple conversational internal prayer.
No, exactly. I think that's what Benedict's coaching is to us, right? Just to kind of let our intellect and our lips, our hearts, our imagination, everything lean in towards the Lord throughout the day. And I think sometimes we don't go to Mass, and, you know, if we go to Sunday Mass or even daily Mass, the rest of the day we also have to be praying and really, if you will, consecrating, right? Consecrating meaning setting aside certain minutes, certain actions, inactions for God. And it's a great thing to do, and it's great discipline, and it also brings great inner peace, brings joy, and also brings a greater sensitivity to Jesus. And we can meet Jesus in the sacraments, and we can also see Jesus more clearly when we leave sacramental encounters and go out into the world in a more peaceful disposition, too. If we practice these things, we'll have the eyes of Christ, the ears of Christ, and the heart of Christ when we kind of come into, especially if it's a stressful situation or, you know, maybe stress at work or social situations, whatever it might be, we'll come in a little bit more sort of spiritually rested and equipped to deal with things that we all have to deal with every day. And sometimes that can be a challenge. These things can help us do that.
Even cultural counselors will recommend that we have a positive attitude, and that idea of finding an opportunity to rejoice every day, really to kind of be grateful in something good that we can find. And this time of year, you know, part of the way through Lent, and in the northern climates or even in the mountains of California, still very much winter, but yet we could find some some beauty in nature if we're not stranded in the middle of it right now. And just looking for those little things, too. We joke based on some of the bad weather sometimes in the winter. How did those pioneers 150 years ago survive in this and their sod huts on the prairie and things like that? And, you know, if it takes two tries to start the car, we're kind of worried a little bit. But to give thanks even for the little simple things that might make life easier.
No, certainly. I think for a lot of us, luxuries have become necessities, and especially we who live here in the West, meaning Europe and North America, and many places we live where there's so much comfort. We do forget that. I'll be honest, we haven't had much snow this year. I'm glad about that. But one of the things I do love is when a snowstorm comes in and stops everyone. Everyone kind of on retreat. Schools close, workplaces close, and then you look out your window or you go for a walk, and everything around your neighborhood looks magically transformed by God into this just beautiful vista. And I think sometimes even in nature, even heavy rains, you know, and even the seasons, if you happen to live in a place where there are four seasons like here, each season presents us with changes and something happening that we can look at. And sometimes you go for walks and you see the flowers in the spring. But I like those big storms. I don't like them the third day after we've had them. But the first day is great because it's like a retreat and everything's covered and everything's been made new and white and beautiful. And especially before the cars and people get to it. But I think really taking time to enter into those things. If you live in an area that's had a lot of snow this year, but even that, nature's gifts can also be God's gift to us. If we see it the right way, we can be actually grateful for all the seasons, and including the struggles that come with weather. But you're right. Imagine the early settlers and people in our areas that had to do so much more with a lot less. And, you know, you find the pilgrims and all these kinds of people always praising God amidst these horrible conditions and calamities. They were constantly thanking God. I think that they were alive and prospering and making it somehow. And we need to kind of get that disposition back. And I think as a culture, society, and even as Catholics, as Christians, if we have a grateful disposition, I think they'll not only reduce anxiety, but we actually see God and His work more clearly. That's what gratitude prayers do. They reduce anxiety, but also we know God's with us when we experience gratitude. And I think, you know, again, think back today, maybe something, you know, in a couple of relationships or a prayer experience you've had, a reception of the Eucharist, or even someone's going home to God the moment they met Christ, that can be a consolation. We start going into those kind of things and just praising God for whatever's happened. God's always bringing good out of it. And we know that from Good Friday, which is called good for a very good reason. It was a horrible day, a difficult day in the life of the whole world, but it's become to be the day where God gave us Himself, gave us everything, and now we rejoice in that day on Good Friday, what God had done. And we too, all our Good Fridays too, will be transformative if we have the gift of faith to ask God to be able to be grateful through those things as much as possible, and then He'll bless that.
Well, Father, too, it's a kind of one of the items on the list from Pope Benedict to take note of a sign from God. And often that can be a little consolation, some beauty in nature. If you have a view right now of a large body of water or some mountains or even some pristine snowbanks, that can be a great beauty. And the Lord, in the midst of whatever's going on, it's harder to see maybe in the good times than the bad, but there will be those little consolations for us.
No, and I think sometimes encountering, we can have the natural vistas and all that, those things. Certainly I have in my part of the world. But I think sometimes encounters with people, for me, do it often, where you just have an encounter with someone, you feel Christ's presence. And especially the elderly, I think, and people of wisdom, there's something about them. Sometimes if you walk into a nursing home, it's not all sad. I think there's amazing people there that are living lives of peacefulness amidst their limitations. And I think that's very, I find those moments actually, I was in a hospital yesterday and, you know, giving anointing to the sick last rites to someone, and these nurses were so, one particular nurse was so wonderful and so generous in her love and her sincerity. I felt Christ was in her. And she even had this little sweatshirt on, said Faith, Hope, and Love. And she was wearing that at work, and she was smiling, and she was sort of like this lighthouse amidst this emergency room. And I was just fascinated by her. And I got in the car and thanked God that she was there. I thanked her before I left. But I think those are just as beautiful moments as seeing a mountain range. And I think God gives us those every day. And we try to be those for other people too, right? So that's the other gift. We can be those eyes and hearts and smiles for others. Mother Teresa always said that, right? Just give a smile. Sometimes people, and now thanks be to God, no more mass. We can see the smiles again. Let's just, you know, give someone a sincere smile, an acknowledgement, a visual acknowledgement. Loving eyes can change a whole person's day and be a sign from God for them, as we've received through so many people. So a good suggestion. And I think you're encouraging us to even do that through Benedict's list is also a help and a challenge. We're getting the challenge, say, to do these kind of things the Holy Father suggested we do for Lent.
And lastly, in our literal last minute with you, Father, maybe some advice that plays into what Pope Francis has said, too, in terms of enjoying the humorous moments in life and knowing that we can maybe be a better representative for Christ with a smile on our face than just a dour expression all the time.
No, I think it's important. Pope Francis has suggested that, and he talks about the peripheries, and you know, sometimes we don't have to go to so far away. Sometimes the peripheries are people on the edge, on the margins of faith, right? So not just materially, but we live in the peripheries today. Wherever we are, at work, at school, at home, the peripheries are people that are on the margins, and again, certainly the poor, but what is the greatest poverty? Not knowing Christ. So the peripheries are all around us, and Pope always, his theme seems to be encounter, right? Encounter people where they're at, and that's what we're called to do. And he does that. He certainly does that in his own life, models that for us. And we need to just encounter people and do that with love. And again, the peripheries come to us. I always say every time we attend a funeral or a wedding, the peripheries are in our churches, and praise God if lapsed people around us, and they know the joy that we receive Christ in the Eucharist, and we're into our faith. We study it. We listen to programs like this. It inspires us. It helps us. We're not alone. We have the non-visual relevant radio family, but also our parish families, people that we're not with oftentimes, that we're all the body of Christ, and we're together, but we need to go out and encounter. Pope Francis encourages us to encounter people, and we encounter Christ through them by doing that. So let's be aware of that today. Let's be intentional about encountering others. I think that's, are we intentional about it? Maybe that's the whole message today. Let's be intentional about these things and intentional about what our Holy Fathers have asked us to do.
Well, Father Marcel Tayon, always a joy to talk with you and invite folks in the neighborhood to check out your work there at St. Thomas More Parish in Narragansett, Rhode Island. And you can hear Father throughout the broadcast day quite often here on Relevant Radio as part of the Inner Life, one of the regular voices there, too. That's at 11 Central with Patrick Connolly, new host there now, too. Thank you so much, Father. We continue with Morning Air next. We'll talk success, leadership, and maybe even a little Green Bay Packers with Dave Durand as we continue with more of Morning Air next here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Never, ever, ever give up, no. Never, ever, ever, ever give up. Never, ever, ever give up.
Never give up!
This is Morning Air, your home for faith, fun, and news in the morning. Jump into the conversation. Call 888-914-9149.
Morning Air rolls on. Thanks for joining us here on the Ides of March, the 15th of March. It's Glenn along with Sarah in for John today, and going to talk productivity a little bit this hour. Part of success and leadership as Dave Durand joins us on a regular basis here on Wednesday. Sarah, as far as productivity, you know, you have a busy job producing the show that mandates to be productive minute by minute. As a busy mom, you've got a lot of things to do to take care of that young family. Any particular productivity tips that you might have to share today?
Nothing that would be good to pass on to listeners. My productivity is writing on my hand the things that are coming into my mind before they leave my mind, and then I go to the bathroom and wash my hands, or I have a sweaty hand, and then I'm trying to stand there even longer trying to decipher what could I have possibly written down on my hand. Not helpful. So, Dave, I need lots of help.
Oh, man, there all the plans go down the drain. Oh, my goodness. Well, hey, we're going to bring in our success coach, Dave Durand, here to talk. Well, you know, Dave, we talk about football from time to time when you and I get the chance to talk together. And I just wondered if you've went out and bought a New York Jets jersey yet in anticipation of your favorite quarterback having a potentially new team this fall.
Oh, my. First of all, Sarah, I think you just need a better marker. Maybe a little more permanent. That probably will help. otherwise, the technique sounds good. And, you know, I think I'm like a lot of Packer fans at this point who were kind of in two different camps. Some are like, no, he's got to stay. And others are like, just let's enough with the drama and move on to, you know, or whatever our transition from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers was. There's going to be another one. Unlike your team.
Well, we're just waiting. It's gonna work out fine for us. The Vikings are waiting their chance because the route to Minnesota, you know, late in their career, maybe one or two good years left, NFL quarterback, is a Hall of Fame career in Green Bay, a quick stop with the Jets, and then on to Minnesota. So it just means that Aaron Rodgers might well be one step closer to being the next Vikings quarterback. And so wouldn't that be
that
something,
Dave? That is very true, actually. That would be something else. And at this point in my fanship, irrelevant.
Well, with the free agency signing open and wide today in the NFL, those NFL teams looking for the best productivity they can get, trying to squeeze under the salary cap and get rid of those expensive guys with all the experience and great qualities, and someone else will pick them up, but trying to get the most out of the young players, part of the productivity equation in the NFL. But we're going to talk productivity a little bit today, and you know, whether we're a GM of a National Football League team or not, you've got a good list to help us avoid some mistakes and solve them.
Yeah, you know, there's so many different ways we can look at productivity, but this particular thing is important here, that there are common productivity mistakes that people do make, and when they make them, they are oftentimes unaware they're making them and then struggle with how to solve them. But the first one is not knowing what the end game is. What are you doing? What is the goal here at the end? And Glenn, over the years, I've mentioned before that there's a lot of times people will say, you know, I want to build a business, or I want to, you know, become a famous actor, or I want to do this or that. And I ask, well, what do you want out of that? I mean, at the end, what is it that you want? And a lot of them talk about the things that they would want to enjoy in it, okay, without understanding the process itself, or not being able to define what it means actually to have reached that particular level at the end in the first place. So I always want them to do the classic thing, begin with the end in mind. What does it mean? What are you trying to accomplish when you want to do this? What's the outcome that you want? And if they're able to articulate that in relatively few sentences, then they definitely are going to have an increased level of productivity, as long as they are not confused about this. What it is that I'm doing must get me closer to that end goal. And if I know what my end goal is, but the things that I'm doing really don't bring me any closer to it, then I'm confused about productivity again.
Always needing to keep that that long view in mind. What is that end goal? And we hear so much from yourself and others, too, that we shouldn't equate busyness with productivity either. And sometimes if we lose that end goal, we can kind of get off on a tangent and be very busy, but we're not really making the progress that we need. And that is one of the things that can also tend to complicate things for us, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So this, by the way, this matters for everything. It doesn't matter what you're doing. If you're raising kids, and one of the greatest sayings is that I'm not raising kids, I'm raising future adults. That, by the way, is always reminding you what the thing is that you're trying to do. In other words, the goal isn't to have their room clean. The goal is for them to clean their room. And this is an important distinction, because the parent will go in and do that work for the child so the child has a clean room, but that doesn't prepare the child for adulthood. So it's to get the child to clean their room and then to eventually get responsible to do that on their own. You know, if you think about in a church setting, you know, a parish priest and pastor has that ultimate goal of souls getting to heaven. And it'd be very easy in that particular role with all the responsibilities to be distracted and think about, well, it's being on this committee or that committee. And yeah, if that committee is the thing that gets people to the church so that you can now administer the sacraments, yes, absolutely. That gets us there. It's a pilot. What is the whole objective of the pilot. It's to get the passengers safely to their destination in an efficient manner. So it's to know what that objective is and to stay with it. Because if we don't do that, we do make things complicated. I will tell you that one of the reasons that I find people needing to be removed from a position, not always fired, they might just have a better place to be in an organization, but sometimes fired, is if they cannot describe what it is they do in simple terms to the average person. And there have been a few times where, even in my own organization, where I had the role that the person has, because when you're an entrepreneur and you start a company, before you have thousands of people work with you, you have yourself, and you're basically doing every role until you find somebody to do that role, and you delegate it, and then you hope that they are the type of person that does that role even better, and it becomes more effective, and on and on. But there have been times where I brought a person in to take over a role that I had in the organization, and I sat down to talk to them about it a month or two later, and I literally have no idea what they're saying about it. It's a rare thing, but it does happen sometimes because people complicate it. One of the reasons that people complicate things is to give themselves a pass on actually getting things done. They want to say, well, how could I have gotten this done? It was so difficult because I had to do this, this, and this. And generally speaking, what they're doing is they're ignoring their primary responsibilities because they don't like them or they're difficult, and they're doing their secondary responsibilities, but they're making the secondary responsibilities seem so difficult they can't get to what it is they need to do. And it usually sounds the same. Well, how do you blame me? I had so much of this to do that I couldn't do that part. So we have to keep it simple. When we keep it simple, we can get great things done.
Is one of those dangers, too, if we get into selling our boss or selling our sales manager as opposed to just being able to show the results. We're so busy saying that we're busy, as opposed to doing the hard work to really get there.
Yes, and it's also funny, too, because generally speaking, there is a peer in that organization who has the same role that's not having to sell themselves on a regular basis. But it is always a dangerous thing, and kind of note to self if you're on the giving or receiving side of this, when you have to constantly tell the person why it is you're doing well. Now, you know, there's a sad, tragic instance where, you know, maybe the boss really doesn't pay attention and has no idea what the person actually does for the organization, and it's valuable and they feel the need to remind them. That's a pretty desperate, sad circumstance that can happen on occasion. But generally speaking, what happens is the person who's trying to sell themselves on the job that they're doing is doing that because they don't feel like they're actually contributing the way they want. They don't feel like the value that they're bringing is actually substantial. So they need to convince others just by words as opposed to the results that they're actually accomplishing.
Dave Durand with us today. This portion of Morning Air. Dave, an author, speaker, executive coach, has joined us for years in this spot during the day on the dial as we continue to look today at common productivity mistakes and how to solve them. One of these can be if it's a job we're working on ourselves or certainly if we're working with others, and that's not recognizing actual progress when it is made.
Yeah, and this is a big deal. So we should recognize progress when it's made for others because it's encouraging and that's a good thing. But we also have to recognize this. Progress is an important topic because you can't recognize progress without measuring things. And if you measure something, then you can grow it. If you don't measure it, it's going to be the type of thing that it's difficult to grow. However, and this is a very substantial thing, progress is an intense motivator. It's one of those things that gets us going. If we have a difficult day or we have challenges, or we're doing something we don't particularly like, but we can see that we're getting somewhere with it, we are much more inclined to want to pursue it and to be inspired to pursue it because it's worth it. See, people will do things that are worth it, but if they're doing things and they feel like they're spinning their wheels and they're not getting anywhere, they want to give up and they want to stop. The problem is that we have a better way of generally measuring and seeing the progress of other people more than ourselves. So we do have to stop and say, okay, where am I making progress here? And, you know, dieting is a great example because if you start eating right and exercising, you don't in the first day or two or three or four or five feel good and have all this energy and make these, you know, tremendous gains by losses that I mean. You generally are just tired and crabby and hungry and irritated, but there is something happening. Your metabolism is beginning to change and there is progress being made. And if you just hang on long enough to see, oh, you know what? My belt is a little bit looser. I feel a little bit more energetic now. That is inspiring. And somebody says to you all of a sudden 3 weeks later, wow, you look good. And you're like, oh, well, maybe this is working here. And you move forward in that because you realize you're making progress.
Mm. David Durand with us, looking at common productivity mistakes, how to solve them. We'll go hunting for elephants in the room when we continue with more with Dave and Morning Air here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app next.
Looking at life from a Catholic worldview, this is Morning Air.
Taking care of business while John is gone. Glenn and Sarah in on Morning Air here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. Continuing our conversation this morning with Success Coach Dave Durand, looking at productivity and some mistakes, how to solve them. Dave, one of those we tend to avoid, right, is failing to admit or see problems right in front of us. There's a good way to do that. We don't have to be rude about it if we're pointing it out to others, but to be honest and authentic, we need to acknowledge some of these things, huh?
Oh, yeah, and particularly when they're the mistakes that we're the ones that are making, you know, those are the hardest ones to admit. People have a pretty easy time pointing out the mistakes of others, but when we're the ones that are off track, we have to really check ourselves. So, you know, there's that saying that I mentioned before. I really helped or encouraged people in our organization to remember that most people would rather be right to their own demise than wrong to their own prosperity. And so we should celebrate any of the mistakes that we're making or errors that we see, because when we see them, we can correct them and we can move forward. And frankly speaking, you know, when you're doing things the right way in business, you're constantly making tiny little tweaks and changes. You know, it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in business is business plans. They are really comical. People will sit down with this, like, you know, 30-page, 40-page, 50-page document, mostly filled with Excel spreadsheets that talk about all these particular numbers. And I always laugh. I'm like, you literally have no idea how those numbers are going to happen. The way those numbers are going to happen is there's going to have to be a bunch of work that gets done. And that work is going to change so much from the time we started and we discover what we're doing that we can't possibly write it all down. So give me a one-page business plan and let's start taking some actions. And when the assumptions that we made are wrong, let's make a pivot, because it doesn't mean we're out of business. It just means we're going to get there a different way. And that might be an oversimplification, but I can tell you it's how entrepreneurs think. And if a person's ever really built a business, they're going to go, well, I can really relate to that. But it's not just building a business. It's really doing anything else. If you're coaching a team, you all of a sudden now recognize, wait a second, I've got this particular talent on this team that is overwhelming in this one particular area. That doesn't fit the way that I normally do this. So what I can do is I can basically shove this person who's got all this particular talent in a place that doesn't let that talent shine. Or what I can do is alter the plan a little bit now according to what we have. So there's always got to be something that has to take place. It's like Mike Tyson said, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. And it's actually true. Things begin to change as you move forward. So we have to recognize our mistakes and recognize the problems that we have when we see them in front of us.
Maybe that fancy business plan, once you've got the loan from the bank, and then you can kind of tuck that away and do what you need to do, right, to make things roll?
Yeah, right, exactly. And, you know, it's funny because the financial people, they do like to look at all sorts of numbers and everything, but they're running their data in other places in so many different ways to determine whether or not that loan's even going to come through, too. So they're going to be more interested in giving a loan to a person who they believe in is behind the idea and gets the idea. And so that even comes out there in that analogy. It's a really good one. So David, those things happen, you know, Glenn, but one, go ahead.
Oh, go finish up. Yeah, go.
Oh, no, I was going to say, but they're actually related to the next thing. And that is that our emotions catch us off guard when it comes to seeing or discovering the problems that we have. So we have a tendency to overblow them or underestimate them. And we would say, oh, this challenge is nothing. I can do this. I'm going to increase my productivity by this amount, or I'm going to overcome this, or I can take on all these things at one time. And we've underestimated the challenge, or we've overestimated it. And we basically become, you know, the servant who has buried his talents. And we need to make sure that we've got this proper investment. We're not afraid to take some risks, but we take them in a way that makes sense.
Hey, Dave, we're going to head to the phones here quickly. It's 888-914-9149. Melanie on the line from Wausau, Wisconsin, talking about productivity with little kids around. Good morning, Melanie. Go right ahead.
Yes. I have a friend who never feels productive because she's home with little, and the dishes continually to be done, and the chores are continually endless, and the children attend, you know. Is there any advice?
Well, yeah, I think there are a couple of things. One is raising kids itself is productive. So I think we have a tendency to almost feel like sometimes the kids are getting in the way of being able to do all this. But the question really is, what's happening in the formation and the shaping of those kids? That playtime that they have is forming them. If you're, you know, if you have other things that you need to help them do to learn to become, you know, better adults, and it means that because of that, there are some of these things that are behind, well, that's productive in a different way. But what I actually really, think is useful in this, and my kids are all adults, but I did raise six children, is that we take our responsibilities and we somehow find a way to combine those responsibilities with the children, so that the kids are being productive by helping you be productive. And now all of a sudden, as a family unit, you're getting a lot of things done and you don't have these things competing against each other. So sometimes that's overwhelming to people. Others see it a little bit clearer. But I think that kind of re-examining what it means to be productive and how to pull everybody together so that those household responsibilities are not separate from the kids' lives, but a part of them.
Well, hopefully that helps you and your friend's situation there a little bit, Melanie. We appreciate your calls this morning. And Dave, always that challenge, especially kind of young, those young years in family life when you're, you know, trying to get the job rolling and then trying to get the kids rolling all at the same time. And I love to share one of the stellar productivity experiences of mine in terms of multitasking as a young dad and also as a program director of a music radio station. I'd think, well, some of the work I could do from home would be the, you know, listening to songs to determine what to play or not. So I'd be bringing home CDs that were all wrapped up tight in the old days with lots of crinkly plastic and the like. And there's home video of me enticing my first child to crawl across the floor by chasing a crinkly piece of CD wrap in my hand there. And so that's some proof of multitasking and trying to feel
productive.
There you
go, exactly.
But I'd say always err on the side of the kids if you can. It's definitely worth it. And one of the things with parenting, as much as so much else of life too, next on the list, Dave, is to don't be giving up easily.
Yeah, it's easy to give up. I mean, we're going to make a lot of mistakes and we're going to get hurt. We're going to be emotionally spent sometimes, we're going to feel burned, we're going to feel embarrassed, all of these things, but they're just a part of life. I mean, you know, it's one of the reasons that people become in their older age calmer and more able to manage circumstances and more poised is because they've been there before. I remember watching George Foreman when he was 50 years old regain the boxing, you know, the unified belt. I mean, he had all of them, right? And here he is, you know, at the time, he was a heavy guy, too. This was when he was still more the KFC guy, not the George Foreman grill guy. And he's fighting these guys who are in way better shape, who are faster and younger, but they're so anxious as they're bopping around, and they're the best in the world. And he's 50 years old, and he's got a piece of chicken in one hand and he's just calmly looking at these guys, and he barely moved and he would just win. Why? Because there was no punch any one of them would deliver him that he hadn't felt or seen before. So there's nothing new here or surprising. They're not going to do anything that he hasn't seen or handled. So he just stays in there and he's calm and he knows himself well and he's strong. He went through all sorts of loss, all sorts of pain, and all sorts of experience, and I'm certain all sorts of embarrassment in order to get to where he had that level of confidence. So let's let all of those things take place, because at some point they bring us to that world champion level there with ourselves, because the experience and the embarrassments and the pain and the losses that we have get us to a level that we could never be in our younger self.
Oh, great advice there, Dave, and bringing back some great visuals of George Foreman as well. Hey, just literally a quick minute left, but finally a word on, you know, it might not all be about money with the point of poorly designed incentives, either personal or corporate incentives can be a challenge.
Yes, what's in it for me? That's not an unholy thing. It can be if it's disordered, but, you know, the worker deserves their pay. It's a good thing to have incentive and recognition. It's a human nature thing. God made human nature in this regard. But having bad ones or things that don't inspire or sometimes have a reverse motivation, if I accomplish this, then I don't get something that I want, is a bad idea. So stopping and looking at that end game and saying, when this is all done, what do I get out of it? Or when this is all done, what are the people that I'm working with get out of it? And does that thing just inspire me that I'm sharing with them? Or do they get something that's important to them out of it? Because if we have poor incentive, we're going to get poor performance. And that makes a whole lot of sense for ourselves and for others.
Well, great performance as always. Always love your advice, Dave Durand, our success and leadership coach, founder of Lighthouse Catholic Media, Best Version Media chairman as well. Thanks for joining us again today, and hopefully we're making it a more productive world as we continue with Morning Air now on Relevant Radio and today's Story Corner. Encouragement can have a lot to do with productivity. Our story today, I Don't Believe a Word of It, from Howard Hendricks. By the fifth grade, I was bearing all the fruit of a kid who feels insecure, unloved, and pretty angry at life. In other words, I was tearing the place apart. However, my teacher, Miss Simon, apparently thought I was blind to this problem because she regularly reminded me, "Howard, you are the worst behaved child in this school." "So tell me something I don't already know," I thought to myself as I proceeded to live up or down to her opinion of me. Needless to say, the fifth grade was probably the worst year of my life. Finally, I was graduated, for obvious reasons, but I left Miss Simon's words ringing in my ears there. "Howard, you're the worst behaved child in this school." You can imagine what my expectations then were upon entering the sixth grade. The first day of class, my teacher, Miss No, went down the roll call, and it wasn't long before she came to my name. "Howard Hendricks," she called out. Glancing from her list to see where I was sitting, with my arms folded, just waiting to go into action, she looked me over for a moment and then said, "I've heard a lot about you." Then she smiled and added, "But I don't believe a word of it." I tell you, that moment was a fundamental turning point, not only in my education, but in my life. Suddenly, unexpectedly, someone believed in me. For the first time in my life, someone saw potential in me. Miss No put me on special assignments. She gave me little jobs to do. She invited me to come in after school and work on my reading and arithmetic. She challenged me with higher standards. I had a hard time letting her down. In fact, one time I got so involved in one of her homework assignments, I stayed up till 1:30 in the morning working on it. Eventually, my father came down the hall and said, "What's the matter, son? Are you sick?" "No, I'm doing homework," I replied. He just kind of blinked and rubbed his eyes, not quite sure whether he was awake. He'd never heard me say anything like that before. What made the difference between fifth grade and sixth? The fact that someone was willing to give me a chance. Someone was willing to believe in me while challenging me with higher expectations. That was risky because there was no guarantee that I'd honor Miss No's trust. Everyone likes the end product of mentoring, especially when it yields a peak performer. The star athlete, the successful business person, the brilliant lawyer, the impressive communicator. But how many of us want to deal with the person at the front end of the process? From 1 Thessalonians 5:11, "Therefore, encourage one another and build one another up, just as you are doing." That's some good encouragement for us today in our Story Corner. If you'd like to hear that again or share it, the Story Corner available in podcast form. Just look for Glenn's Story Corner on the Relevant Radio app or the Relevant Radio website at relevantradio.com. Facebook, the Glenn Story Corner page there too has the text and audio for you each and every day, posted a little bit later in the morning, and you are welcome to send your suggestions along too. Story you've come across or maybe even written, send it to morningair@relevantradio.com, morningair@relevantradio.com. Thanks to producer Gabby, producer Sarah, and the whole crew for making it happen today. There's more with Patrick Madrid coming up straight ahead on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.